Chapter 53. From Darkness to Light. Ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Paul, 1908. The last paragraph of the attack upon Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science by Georgine Milmine and McClure's Magazine began, quote, "On the theoretical side, Mrs. Eddy's contribution to mental healing has been, in the main, fallacious, pseudodoxical, and absurd." Unquote. Though this series included some authentic historical material and purported to be the story of Mrs. Eddy's life and the history of Christian Science, it was motivated by malice and instigated by, quote, "the powers of evil, leagued together in secret conspiracy against the Lord and against his Christ in Christian Science," end quote. That fact is what impelled Sybil Wilbur to pursue and present the truth with an opposite motive. Throughout 1907, Miss Wilbur's articles had appeared in Human Life magazine, and since that time, she had been working diligently on her Life of Mary Baker Eddy. During the writing, Miss Wilbur took her questions to Alfred Farlow, who, in turn, sent them to Mrs. Eddy. Miss Wilbur said, quote, "Her dictated replies came to me from her secretary, with occasional handwritten notes of encouragement from the leader," end quote. As the writing progressed, Miss Wilbur read her manuscript, a few chapters at a time, to Mr. Farlow, who occasionally advised an omission, where Miss Wilbur waxed too bitter in refuting the malice. During this time, she also had a few letters from Mrs. Eddy and a few visits with her, both at Pleasant View and Chestnut Hill. She knelt beside Mrs. Eddy's chair in a last interview at Chestnut Hill, and the leader said to her, "I am an old woman, my dear, and I have never found it wise to argue with a lie. You are doing what I cannot do for myself. Do it wisely." By the time the last installment of McClure's 14-part series appeared in June of 1908, Sybil Wilbur's biography was nearing completion. John V. Dittemore from Indiana, who had resigned from the business world to give full time to Christian Science, had recently been made committee on publication for New York. He, together with two partners, organized the Concord Publishing Company to publish Miss Wilbur's book. The volume was printed, bound, and ready for issuance on August 29th, when Mrs. Eddy called Alfred Farlow and directed him to stop the circulation of the book. On that Saturday, Mr. Fry wrote in his diary, "Mrs. Eddy told me, August 29, 1908, that she told Reverend I.C. Tomlinson that he was not broad enough to write her history, but that she would sometime get the right one to write it for her. Calvin A. Fry." Adam Dickey wrote in his book, in regard to Mrs. Eddy's history, "I knew that on several occasions the proposition had been made to her by others to write a history of her life and experiences, all of which she firmly declined to consider. Her reply to proposals of this kind was, quote, 'The time has not yet come for my history to be written. The person to whom this important work should be entrusted is not here yet, and I will not give my consent to its being done at this time.'" End quote. This was the nature of the reply she invariably made whenever some of her loving students proposed to her that her life history should be written. The leader's encouragement of Sybil Wilbur in her project may have been merely for Miss Wilbur's own progress, spiritward. Be that as it may, on Sunday morning, August 30th, Mr. Farlow called on Miss Wilbur and delivered a letter to her from Mrs. Eddy. Miss Wilbur was devastated as she read the letter with trembling hands and blanched face. She wrote of this moment, "How could I know what counseled delay? But Alfred Farlow knew and stood watching me. Does this mean never?" I asked. "It may mean never," he said. "What message shall I take from you to Mrs. Eddy?" After a pause, I faltered. "Tell her," I said, "divine love governs. I will tell her what you say, and that you are a good soldier." It was characteristic of him that he gave me no encouragement and left me with his usual cheerfulness and equanimity. Mrs. Eddy wrote Miss Wilbur a letter of thanks that same day, but the latter was cast into the depths of despair and anguished for the next month. John Didymore wrote on September 10th to one of his partners in the publishing venture, William R. Brown. "Miss Wilbur has consulted Mr. Elder, and he is going to undertake to find out for her whether the suppression of the book can be withdrawn. Miss W. seems pretty much worked up and has numerous theories as to why things are as they are." Whether they were contemplating legal action or merely hoping that Mr. Elder could influence Mrs. Eddy to withdraw her objection is not clear. In a note of September 24th, Adam Dickey wrote, quote, "As a choice of two evils, do you not think it would be better to waive objection to the circulation of the book and let them go ahead without your endorsement?" End quote. Mrs. Eddy withdrew her objection, and the Concord Publishing Company was one of the first to apply for an advertisement in the Christian Science Monitor when it was first announced in the Sentinel of October 17th. A Christian Science Monitor dated September 15th, 1908, was printed as a sample to show to Mrs. Eddy, but it was not sold, and few were even aware of its publication. On September 19th, little more than a month after the announcement that the publishing house had been paid for, a new appeal for contributions to enlarge the publishing house was published with no explanation. This announcement probably caused a good deal of speculation throughout the field, and doubly so in Boston, where the demolition of the buildings had begun, which were on the site on which the addition to the publishing house was to be erected. Before the announcement of the daily paper on October 17th, Mr. Kimball had returned from his European lecture tour and spent 2 days with Mrs. Eddy at Chestnut Hill. There was a good deal of talk in the field about Mr. Kimball's teaching, and it had not escaped his ears. The general thought about Christian Science in 1908 could be expressed as the physical healing of a material body. Mr. Kimball taught that there is no material body, that, quote, "all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation," end quote, including the body. But the right thing at the wrong time is no longer right, and many other teachers in the field began saying that Mr. Kimball was spiritualizing matter. Many years later, another teacher said, quote, "What else are you going to do with it?" end quote. But in 1908, the thought was not sufficiently leavened to comprehend one perfect spiritual being. Most students had two creations, a false material one that must be denied and overcome, and a true spiritual creation, which must be brought forth and demonstrated. Gilbert Carpenter, who was there in 1908, analyzed the controversy. Edward A. Kimball was a giant in a metaphysical sense, and one of Mrs. Eddy's outstanding students. Yet he taught many things that seem questionable to the present student of science and health. A statement from his pen to illustrate this point is, quote, "Every organ or function of the body is an idea of God," end quote. Apparently, he had authority from Mrs. Eddy for it, since she told him at one time that it was permissible for him to state Christian Science in this way. Her words were, quote, "Declare, I have a perfect liver in God, and let the spiritual import of this declaration destroy the false concept about liver. You may declare, I have a perfect liver, or there is no liver, provided the thought back of these declarations is right," end quote. If Mr. Kimball's statement had Mrs. Eddy's authority, then why in the manuscript which he sent her did she draw a pencil line around it and write in the margin, "a lie"? Mrs. Eddy corrected some of Mr. Kimball's statements, not because they were necessarily wrong, but because he was planning to give them to the public, who could not possibly distinguish between the real, which as yet has not appeared, and the unreal, which seems to be with us always. If the first edition of Science and Health in 1875 contained the, quote, "complete statement of Christian Science," end quote, retrospection, page 37, then the author's subsequent changes were not metaphysical corrections, but accommodations to the thought of the age she was addressing. Mr. Carpenter has said of her revisions and revising, "Mrs. Eddy revised Science and Health not because there was anything untrue about the first edition, but because it did not present Christian Science in a form sufficiently adapted to the needs of the world. No one will ever know the spiritual thought and effort Mrs. Eddy expended in order to step down and accommodate revelation as it came to her, so that it could be comprehended by the beginner. In fact, she once remarked that she had brought Science and Health, or Christian Science, down just as far as she could, without losing it. Mr. Kimball's grandson wrote that his grandfather's two-day interview with Mrs. Eddy at Chestnut Hill in the fall of 1908 was in regard to teaching body. This undoubtedly led to a part of his association address of 1908, in which he stated, as against the statement frequently made by scientists, quote, "Well, I suppose we must all pass through the belief of death in order to get rid of this material body," end quote. "We are warranted in this statement. There is no this material body to get rid of." The very statement itself, so often made by scientists, is a death sentence in itself. Moreover, a mortal cannot die out of the belief that body is material. He has to live out of it. There is no way out of the belief of death but to live. Life is love, spirit, and if we would overcome the false material sense of life and matter, we must love our way out. He who loves not lives not, for love is life. In order to get the body that manifests life, we must begin to declare for it, and gradually or rapidly come into our own, namely, eternal body. In your treatment of the sick, be sure to declare the facts about body. Some of the physicians show a more correct sense of body than do some Christian Scientists. Dr. W. A. Hammond, former Surgeon General of the United States, has recently said that there is no physiological reason why the body of a human being should die. He refers to the capacity of the body to renew its tissues and to continue its functions and says that this could go on indefinitely. It is altogether possible that it was during this 2-day interview, when they were going so thoroughly into the teaching of body, that Mr. Kimball asked Mrs. Eddy what would happen to the Christian Science movement if she should pass on. She replied, "It would degenerate into material prosperity." He then asked, "What would happen if she ascended?" She hesitated before answering with a beatific smile. "The Mother Church would be dissolved." Mrs. Eddy had a unique gold ring, a gift from her son, George W. Glover, which was made from several colors of gold from the Dakota Black Hills. In the summer of 1908, she had had inscribed on the inner band, quote, M.A.S., August 1908, from M.B.E., end quote, and presented this ring to her maid, Minnie Adelaide Still. In the year that Miss Still had been with her, a good many students had been called to Mrs. Eddy's home. Some had remained a few days, some a few weeks, and some had not stayed at all. But all felt blessed by their brief meeting with the leader. Mrs. Eddy, however, said one day to Mr. Dickey, quote, "This matter of students coming here for a few days and then going away and proclaiming what wonderful things they have learned is a menace to the cause. When they learn anything, they stay here. They are not sent away. When they are sent away and give out the idea that they know so much, they are overreaching themselves and deceiving others." End quote. In the fall, one more student came who did stay and become a member of the household. William R. Rathbone, a Colorado businessman, first learned of Christian Science in 1893 while living temporarily in Chicago. At that time, he and his wife, Ella, both had class instruction with a pioneer student of Mrs. Eddy, Mrs. Mary W. Adams. 10 years later, the Rathbones were members of the primary class of the Board of Education, taught by Mr. Kimball, in 1903. Mr. Rathbone also attended Judge Hanna's normal class in 1907. Ella continued her Christian Science practice in Boulder, Colorado, when William was called to Chestnut Hill in the fall of 1908. The new students in the home, such as Mr. Rathbone and Mr. Dickey, were dedicated Christian Scientists. But there was one great difference between them and Calvin Fry. Their loyalty was divided between the leader and her organization, whereas Calvin saw the leader and her organization as one. After he had been there for a time, Rathfond described this difference in his diary. It came to me that C.F. is different from the rest of us, among other things, in this. We have two aims in our work here. First, to protect our leader, and second, to protect the cause. C.F. has shown his are first to protect our leader, and second, to protect our leader. Mrs. Eddy needed the youthful, fearless, buoyant enthusiasm of the newcomers to carry out her instructions for the progress of the cause. But none could ever know what Calvin Fry meant to her. To Calvin, Mrs. Eddy was the cause, and he had stood by her side through 26 years of malicious persecution. At times, he had basked in her praise and appreciation, and very often he had suffered severe rebukes. The other students had little understanding of the importance of Calvin's role, but one student who did have great appreciation for Mr. Fry was Alfred Farlow. Mr. Farlow had been on another front line as Committee on Publication for a good many years. On May 31st, he had been called to Chestnut Hill, where he planned to spend the nights while maintaining his office as COP in Boston from 9 to 5 each day. But Mrs. Eddy worked night and day, and assisting the leader at Chestnut Hill was much more of a full-time position than most students ever imagined. The schedule was more than Alfred could maintain, and he left Chestnut Hill on June 2nd. In a letter he wrote on August 3rd, Mr. Farlow said to Calvin Fry, "Knowing as much as I do about what you have to contend with, constantly, I am in a position to appreciate your excellent service. For that reason, I would be glad to take off my shoes and give them to you any time, and walk home barefoot. So please get rid of your exceeding modesty on this subject." A letter from the new first reader, Clifford P. Smith, indicates that Mrs. Eddy may have changed her mind about flowers at Chestnut Hill. Judge Smith wrote on Sunday, September 13th, "Beloved leader, I wish to thank you in behalf of the congregation, as well as myself, for the beautiful roses which you so thoughtfully and lovingly provided for today's services in the Mother Church. Announcements were made to both congregations that the flowers were your gift, and I am sure that all enjoyed them as flowers and appreciated them as your gift. I certainly did." Mrs. Eddy inquired every day about the progress of the monitor, which may have prompted the September 15th sample they had made for her, and which undoubtedly kept everyone working diligently. All who knew the leader, however, knew that none worked as diligently and unceasingly as did she, and she was their ensample. A week before, an editorial by Archibald McClellan announced the forthcoming Christian Science Monitor, another item of interest and import appeared in the Sentinel of October 10th. It was the letter that Mrs. Eddy had received in August from Jules Maurice Gaspard. If Mr. Gaspard had not already done so, Mrs. Eddy had him copyright his portrait of her, and this new portrait, including, quote, "Copyright 1908 by Jules Maurice Gaspard," end quote, became the frontispiece in the 50th revision of Science and Health in 1908. This portrait appeared above the facsimile of her signature, beginning in 1908, and continued to appear in each edition of Science and Health throughout 1909 and 1910. She is wearing her diamond cross in this picture, but the dark background has been removed. In this edition, which replaced the dark portrait with a light one, there was another significant change. Ever since the first edition, each succeeding edition had presented the greatest obstacle the founder had had to meet and the greatest stumbling block to all students. It was depicted on the page following the title page in the words, I, itself I, the inside and outside, the what and the why, the when and the where, the low and the high, all I, itself I. This anonymous poem was removed along with the dark picture and replaced with the leader's words. O, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere. Mary Baker G. Eddy.